waad ku mahadsantahay inaad dhegaysato radio s b s faahfaahin dheeraada oo ku saabsan sida loo dhagaysta barnaamijka oo dhammaystiran booqo s b s .com.au xariijin soomaali.
What prompted you to write the topic of belonging and in particular Somalis in those two countries?
My PhD was on possible spaces of Somali belonging, and it started out when I met a family initially who were from Somalia and who were living in Rome. And this family wanted to be accepted as Italian initially, but couldn't get Italian citizenship. And they revealed to me the amazing history that exists between Italy and Somalia, which I was ignorant of until that point. And it surprised me that they had such cultural inside knowledge of Italian culture from that colonisation, yet they weren't eligible to become Italian citizens, and they'd migrated to come to Australia to join family in Melbourne, where they now live. So the question of belonging, being able to live in a particular place, was foremost in my mind, having met this family. The other aspect was that I am Australian, and I wanted to do a study that compared the migration experiences of Australia with Italy, which is a country very close to my heart, as I did my undergraduate degree in Italian studies and wrote a thesis about immigration in Italy and speak Italian. So I have a sense of being at home in Italy and in Australia. I lived in Italy as a teenager for a year with an Italian family and went to high school there, and that gave me a taste of what it means to belong in more than one place and feel at home in more than one place. So the question of what it is to be at home is one that is personally relevant to me as well. And as Somalis are one of Australia's growing communities who have had complex trajectories of resettlement, I was interested, having met this family and also having some family of my own who'd lived in Somalia, in studying the experiences of Somalis in the diaspora. And so for that reason, I chose to look at belonging of Somalis in Italy and Australia.
All right, let's start with the Somalis in Italy. Of course, as you said, Somalis had a long history with Italy, with the colonial history. How do you find their connection with Italy when they come there as a migrant, particularly after the collapse of the Somali state? Were they welcome because of that historical connection, or how do they find themselves in Italy?
Many Somalis were already living in Italy due to a series of agreements between Italian institutions and Somali ones. When the Somali state went into a state of war and collapse, many Somalis were unable to return to Somalia, so stayed on. Many of them, though, had not acquired official rights to live in Italy permanently and were treated as guests at the time. And Nuruddin Farah, who wrote a book, Voices in the Somali Diaspora, writes about this predicament of how Somalis in Italy were treated like guests. And the Italian government, said that Somalis could stay until the conflict ended, then they'd be sent back. But as we know, the conflict went on a lot longer than anyone expected it to, yet Somalis weren't actually welcomed in the way that we might expect, given the historical past between the two countries. And so for Somalis living in Italy, just like every other migrant, they need to live in Italy for 10 years uninterrupted. And even then, after that 10-year period, it's very difficult to acquire citizenship. The family that I met in Rome had been living in Rome for 15 years, had a child born in Rome who wasn't able to become an Italian citizen until she was 18. So basically, the experience is one of being a second-class citizen in a country like Italy. And there is currently talk of reforming citizenship. Citizenship law reform has been before the parliament for a couple of years now, but it still hasn't been approved. So there's a lot of movement on the ground to try and change that situation, but it hasn't yet changed.
Despite the fact that Somalis in Italy are not given citizenship, they're not given special treatment because of their connection to Italy in historical past, yet there are a lot of authors, Italian-Somalians, who highlight their plight and belongings. And you mentioned authors like Ijaba Sego and Christina Ali Farah, whom I actually met here in Melbourne, who have written between them half a dozen books. And how did their literary work help their integration into Italian society?
So these authors, they've written some incredible books that explore what it means to be Somali and to be Italian. And both authors consider themselves to be entirely Somali and entirely Italian, in the sense that Ijaba Sego, for example, was born in Rome to Somali parents. So she grew up in Italy, bilingual, bicultural. Christina Ali Farah was born also in Italy to a Somali father and an Italian mother, and then went to live in Somalia at the age of 3, where she grew up, and returned to Italy later in life. So both authors have a very strong belonging to both cultures and see the world through different points of view, and that's very evident in their writing. And their writing about being Somali in Italy actually highlights some of these historical chapters that don't really get officially acknowledged yet in Italian institutions, in Italian schools. They're starting to be acknowledged thanks to this literature. So the study that I did looked at the ways in which this sort of cultural production can actually create a space for belonging, in the sense that it's representing Somalis in their complexity and their history. And Somalis can no longer be forgotten or ignored then, because these authors have brought to light what it means actually to be Somali in Italy, to be a Somali Italian or an Italian Somali. They create this point of connection that is always there but is not always acknowledged. So they bring it to light.
But in Australia, in contrast, people are given citizenship after a few years. But that does not necessarily mean it gives them the sense of belonging, not at least immediately. Why is that?
When I began to do some research on Somalis in Australia, I joined a playgroup. My daughter at the time was about a year old, so I went with her to a Somali playgroup in Broadmeadows. And the mothers there expressed concern that their children were growing up without a culture that they could, you know, communicate to their children. They were concerned that there was a loss of culture from growing up in Australia. They tried to get books in Somali, for example, but there were only books in Arabic available at the local library. There were not images of Somali culture readily available to them, and that was deeply concerning, this sort of cultural absence. And I think that example gives an idea of what it has been like for Somalis resettling in Australia. So there is an official belonging that comes with citizenship, but the cultural belonging can take longer to establish, and it's different, a little bit different now than it was when I began my research in, you know, over 10 years ago now. It's a very different situation in Australia to what it is in Italy in terms of the cultural kind of continuity that Somalis have in those two countries.
And one of the reasons is, as you said, there's not a lot of, for example, Somali-Australian authors who highlight their issues and what the community is facing and the challenges and all that. Now, Somalis are also categorized, one, as an African, a member of African community, of course, and therefore could be victims of racial discrimination, as you said in the book, but also because of their Islamic faith, they come under national security post-September 11. Now, how do these two identities impact their endeavours to integrate?
This is part of the complication, I think, as well for Somalis, is that they do face discrimination on multiple fronts in some of the Western countries in which they've resettled. In part, this is a particularly felt and acute phenomenon since September 11 happened, and Muslims in the West have been used as a scapegoat and have been discriminated against, and Somalis have been victims of that discrimination as well. I think the media in particular play a role in creating, reinforcing a certain stereotype of what it means to be African or what it means to be Muslim, and that affects perceptions of Somalis, so that for people that are simply getting misrepresentations through dominant media of what it means to be Somali, that might increase attitudes that are discriminatory. So it's very important to find representations that are complex and present Somalis in their full humanity, rather than seeing stereotypes reinforced that are very harmful and reductive.
You mentioned how the media frames Somalis and migrants and sometimes put them in a negative light. But also, on the other hand, there's a page in the book where it says, talking about young Somalis in Australia or young Australian Somalis. And in the book, it says, it's difficult for many young Somalis to integrate into, quote, Australian way of life, end quote, without appearing disloyal to their family or the community. What does that mean? How do these young people see Australian way of life? Do they see it as a negative? Is there a pushback from their family or members of the community, the whole point of integration?
I guess when you're thinking about young people as opposed to older generations, the experiences are very different, particularly when in migration there's a sudden shift in cultures. And so the older generations have grown up immersed in one kind of cultural environment. The children who are born here or who come early on in life grow up in a different kind of cultural environment. So the kinds of understandings that they have differ. And that can create points of tension in between generations, different points of view. There can be language barriers as well, when the children don't necessarily grow up, for example, speaking Somali, and the parents don't necessarily speak fluent English, so the children can become mediators between these cultures for their parents, but there can be all sorts of issues around that as well. And there have been some interesting studies in sociology on the ideas around bonding versus bridging capital, for example, which talk about how within certain communities, bonding capital enables people to feel connected to family groups, to broader community cultural groups, but at the same time, that can sometimes lead to expectations that young people will conform to certain cultural values that the young people may feel are not actually appropriate for them, because in their new environment or in the wider culture, they have developed bridging capital, or they want to interact with different kinds of lifestyles that perhaps don't sit necessarily well with, you know, their origins or the cultural origins that bring with them certain expectations. So it's not to say in any way that they're in opposition, but there can be misunderstandings and there can be tensions around these things.
While you were researching for the book, you met and spoke many Somalis and others who work with Somalis in those two countries. What was the biggest challenges Somali communities, both in Australia and Italy, were facing?
In both countries, there's the issue of, I suppose, being framed in a particular way by the media, for example. But the issues in terms of the practical settlement are different in the sense that Australia is a country that has an official program of immigration, an immigration department. It has official multiculturalism. So there are all kinds of very good services set up to support migrants who come to Australia or Somalis who settle here, whereas in Italy, no such services are in place. So at an official level, it can be very difficult. In fact, most Somalis migrating to Europe treat Italy as a country of transition in the hope of reaching other European destinations where they will have a better set of opportunities and services.
In the context of integration and immigration in Australia, there has been a debate about Section 18C of Discrimination Act. Now, the opponent of 18C always cite the freedom of speech, so it's violating our freedom of speech, while the opponents always cite this will create a hate speech. It's allowing hate speech to other ethnic groups particularly. What's your take on it, on that particular debate?
Freedom of speech is not freedom to express vitriol towards people in the community. I mean, freedom of speech is about having openness of discussion and debate. It's not about inciting hatred or, you know, using words to create violence. I think it makes no sense at all to think of freedom of speech in terms of... It makes me very angry when I hear that kind of argument about I'm allowed to say I hate all these people, or I'm allowed to make inflammatory remarks. Okay, so maybe if people do that, but then the effects of those remarks, what are the effects? You know, every person needs to think about the consequences of the things that they say, the impact that their expression will have on others. I don't think freedom being, you know, free in speech means freedom to attack, you know, other people. I don't see it in that way at all. I don't know if that answers your question.
I heard that you were learning Somali language, and I was hoping that we conducted this interview in Somali. Nevertheless, share with my audiences how far did you go with your Somali language. Tell us whatever you can in Somali.
I learnt a few Somali words in reading the literature of the Italian Somali authors, in fact, because I learnt that many words in Somali, many terms, actually come from the Italian. They've been imported. And there are some terms also that come from the English language. So it's interesting, though, the language evolves in accordance with the different cultures it comes into contact with. And, for example, the word for cappuccini, like, comes from, is that right? Cappuccino. Iskawaran. Waan abad.
Waad ku mahadsantahay inaad dhageysato raadiyaha SBS toos u dhageysa barnaamijka habeenada Arbacada iyo Jimcada 10-ka fiidnimo, ama kaga soo cesho website-ka iyaga iyo SBS Radio app. Booqo sbs.com.au/somali.